This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free Blackstone 8-piece accessory kit when you buy a Blackstone 28-inch griddle. Plus, get two free select Craftsman V20 tools when you buy an RP brushless drill and impact driver combo kit. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey!
Turn it up! Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, remate de gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Oribe!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Senate Avenue Brewing Company in Jersey Village. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 16,000 Dillard in Jersey Village. Live show here tonight. And a really nice audience that came out. So thanks to everybody that come back. Andrew Kopelski of Snowdrop Foundation over there. By the way, we're giving out, close to $300,000 in scholarships, right? So there you go, Snowdrop Foundation. Awesome. So a big thank you to Andrew coming out tonight. We got Edgar out here. We got Leo. Thanks to the Dynamo PR for bringing us the top man here for the Houston Dash. He is Fabrice Couture, and he joins us now. Dash right now, only 4 points out of a playoff spot. Welcome in, Fabrice. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to having the conversation.
Yeah, pleasure meeting you, too. And we've been watching the Dash from the outside. So just up to this point, give us a synopsis. Your first time as a head coach. You've been an assistant on a number of NWSL teams in your career. Just kind of take us into where the team is right now, striking distance of a playoff spot in the table.
Yeah, well, I think there's two things that we really try to lay a foundation in from day one was a standards-driven culture and a team identity, right? So those are two things that we're working towards a lot, and obviously from the identity standpoint, you're starting to see a little bit of our, you know, fingerprints of what we're trying to do in possession, and I think for us that's been a big thing for us, especially how we defend, compact lines, all that good stuff. So I think that's the first piece, and the second piece is just getting the culture right. I've been very fortunate to have had several experiences in the past of just, okay, what do different cultures look like? And then obviously seen in here, one thing that really marked me was how coachable the players are, how hungry they are to get better and grow. And so that's been the two things that we've really tried to done from day one. And I think if you look at even some of the games, you know, we have our stats people come in, like there's been some games where I think we've been a little bit unfortunate at times. There's no excuses. You know, if you look at the expected goals for and against, there's been games where, you know, I think definitely could have gone potentially our way, but we just have to get better on the little things. I think there's a lot of just little detail and winning mentality that we have to get over. And I think the last thing is increase our belief. I think that's the biggest thing, is increase our belief in what we're doing and the ability that we can be, you know, a great side.
One thing I've noticed is your possession game and your build is better than I've seen in the past since Juan Carlos Amoros was here. I think that's real obvious. I think you've made some great strides there. When you say culture, explain to my listeners what that means. I mean, back in my day, it was our locker room or whatever. But take us a little deeper into the cultural piece. I know it has to have work ethic. I mean, I think these are prerequisites for being a professional soccer player.
Yeah.
But what does culture mean to you?
I think very simply, values plus behaviors. So just we've all been maybe in different companies where you have maybe a bunch of words on the wall, and then it's not really showcased in our behaviors. And so I think the biggest thing for us is, you know, we have three core values that the team kind of unanimously agreed on. And so just working through that and what does it look like to behave that way each and every day.
Can you tell us what those are, or is that a secret?
I think it's really easy. It's honor, unity, and trust. So everything we do every day, like how do I build trust with the team day in and day out, right? Obviously, what kind of environment are we creating? How are we treating them? How are we challenging them? How are we caring for them? And then on the flip side, how are they building trust with each other? How are they building trust with the staff? And then the other piece is the unity piece, right? So what does that look like to be a unified group regardless of your role and what you're playing? So always bringing back to that, you know, and I think culture is what you do each and every day, right? It is also, culture is also what you permit. So I could sit here and talk about these things, but if we allow maybe behaviors of that go against our values, that's also our culture. So always having your pulse and your finger on where's the culture right now, where do we need, what gaps do we have in our culture that we need to steer back towards?
So ultimately somebody throughout a season is going to break the culture a little bit, and then the culture is built that it pulls that person
correct
back in. So you as a coach might have to remind them, maybe the players do.
For sure.
The whole thing.
And staff, sometimes, you know, I could be out of line. We're all immune. We're all human, right? So, like, you know, what have we all agreed to? And then how do we get back to that?
Some checks and balances. Yeah. All right. We're talking to Fabrice Couture. He is the head coach of the Houston Dash. He's been an assistant in Chicago, been an assistant in North Carolina as well. Those experiences there as an assistant coach and under the coaches that you worked with there, how impactful are they on where you are now as a head coach?
Yeah, I think it's the coaching staff, but I also think it was also the players too. Just seeing how some very player-led cultures and what they did, and I think sometimes, you know, as a coach you can have all the greatest ideas in the world, but you also need kind of players to be autonomous, take ownership, and kind of be a sounding board for what you want, you know, and I think that's something I learned a lot there. And I also learned, you know, just the importance of creating an exceptional environment that players really want to come to. You know, I think we really had that in North Carolina, and I think that's something we've tried to do each and every day. How do you create a destination of choice, right? So how do you create an environment where, like, people aren't just here because they have to be, but they're here because they really want to be?
You got a Women's World Cup coming soon. Of course, we have the Men's World Cup here, but after that, the Women's World Cup is coming. So do you notice that as something players in your squad are reaching for?
Absolutely. You know, and I think where they also know how good an environment, playing time, all those things are to be ready for that next stage, you know. And so I think that's been, you know, we have quite a few that are on these different rosters that are really vying for that. So I think, yeah, it's been I love our international group for sure.
Fabrice, the word is you're looking for a striker. No disrespect to anybody who's on the team now, but this is professional sports. You're looking for a game changer in the market in the summer. Is that something you can talk about a little bit?
Yeah, look, I think our roster is quite solid, but I think, like you've mentioned, I think we're always looking how can we add value, right? How can we add value to our different rosters? And so, yeah, I think we're looking at positions for sure that could be potentially one of them, and yeah, so we'll see where things go, but I have full trust in our club as a whole and what we're doing and what we're trying to build, and yeah, and it works hand in hand. It's not just my decision or the recruiting director's decision or the president's decision. Like, we all work hand in hand. We meet weekly, go over, hey, where are we at with certain conversations, where are we at, what are the needs of the roster, all those things. So yeah,
so what I see is you're in a lot of games, but sometimes tactics, all these other things, it's simply a game changer, somebody who can make a play. Is that the type of person you might be looking for now to add to the squad?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, the game is filled with moments. You know, how many times do you see a game where a team is, let's say, dominating, and then the other team just has that one moment because they have maybe the player or the knack for knowing how to score, all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, those are definitely players that we need to continually add to our roster to add value. So there's a lot of stuff we're doing towards the build, towards the final third. Now we're looking for that last piece for sure.
I look at this, and we're talking to Fabrice Couture. He is the head coach of the Houston Dash in the NWSL. They play down at Shell Energy Stadium here in Houston. So this is your first year as a head coach. You got some tough decisions because you got some Canadians who've won gold medals on your team now that you're having to face in a different way, and their roles might be changing. You got a lot of really serious, tough decisions. You've just made a change in goal with an incumbent in Jane Campbell. Now you got Abby Smith out of the University of Texas in goal. These are not easy decisions to make, but it's the job, right?
It is, and I would say I have a really good staff to talk through You know, there's never a decision that I make that's solely mine. Obviously, I take full responsibility for it, but we're always brainstorming. I have a staff that challenges me as well. And we're always, at the end of the day, like, we have a competitive group. And so for us, it's, you know, that's something that we really want to pride ourselves in is, hey, if you're really working hard towards it, like, an opportunity is going to be given, especially if you've earned it. So, and that's been the case, I think, in this situation that you've spoken about.
What if everybody's, you know, you got 50% here, 50% here on a decision? Who's the tiebreaker? You? On decision
yes,
making?
Yes, of course. Yeah. Of course. And at the end of the day, there's been moments where maybe two or three staff members maybe want to go in this direction. And so I listen, but at the end of the day, like, I also trust my gut and I trust my instinct. And that's something I've learned early on. Like, I don't waver on that. And so if that is something that's really in there and I have certain reasons for it, I go through with it. I don't care how hard or how easy the decision is.
All right. If the Houston Dash are playing in the model that you want, what does it look like?
Ooh, can you expand more on the
model?
Well,
your playing style. If you guys are hitting all cylinders, tell me what's working.
So we're...
Possession's one of them, I know you already mentioned.
But it's possession to progress, right? So we talk a lot about breaking lines. And so, like, for us, we have certain KPIs that it's not just KPI, meaning key performance indicator. That's not just how much you have the ball. It's more how many lines are you breaking, you know? And so even in the last game against Orlando, if you look at the first half, like, we were a couple inches off sometimes from some of these offside, things like that, where we're looking to break the last line. So for us, it's, yeah, we want to move the opposition. We want to keep the ball, but it's really how can we hurt them? So I think for us, it's we call speed ups as well. So it's like you play now the speed, now the speed of the attack has to increase, you know?
And tempo.
So, tempo, all that. So just almost not allowing the defense to reset themselves, you know? But then also, if they are set, having the ball in the attacking third, moving them, you know what I mean, and being patient in possession. So that's the first piece. I think the other piece is in defensive transition. So I think that's something we've learned a lot this year is I think sometimes we've been a little bit naive in terms of when we've lost the ball higher up, maybe we have to, you know, maybe it's a tactical foul. Maybe it's a counter press where you really have to be good in those directions in that moment so that you don't get hurt in the transition on behind. You know, in this league, it's so transitional, right? So that's an area where I want us to, and we've made great strides. I mean, against Orlando, like, you know, especially in the second half, there's times where we really minimized Banda's, you know, like, ability to get him behind because we defended those moments really, really well. So that's all growth, you know. And then I think attacking transition, that's an area where we can really grow in because we have dynamic players. So how can we hurt the opposition a little more in those moments, for sure?
If we talk about the goalkeeping position, this is a big one because Jane Campbell's a big favorite down here, but you've made the tough decision with Abby Smith. And, you know, people are, oh, she must be injured. No, sometimes you got to change things up, right? How's the reaction been from Jane Campbell? And, of course, Abby Smith has played well with her opportunity.
Jane's been fantastic. Like, honestly, she shows up. She, whatever's asked of her, she's doing it. We're having conversations weekly, and right now it's been a week-to-week decision. We also feel Abby has done well and has performed well, and that's also just the reality of where things are at.
Seven saves in the Orlando game?
For sure.
Yeah.
And so I think also, Jane's been excellent in training and doing everything that's asked. So she's been, above reproach in that regard.
Overall, the NWSL, what are some of the changes you've seen through your lens over the years being involved in the league?
Well, I think there's been more accountability for clubs, for staff, for even players. And I think that's a big positive. So I think that's really good. And I think at the end of the day, all the progress that I'm seeing, especially if you look at it from an ownership revenue standpoint, like in the past, it was like, okay, kind of treated it as a hobby, you know, and now you're actually seeing it. It's a professional sport and there's money to be made. There's revenue to be made, all those things. So I think the professionalism, the investment has soared, right? And so everything, all the stakes have risen, right? And everything. So I think that's exciting. It's exciting to be a part of. And I consider the NWSL just like the Premier League on the men's side. You know, I consider it as one of the top leagues, if not the top one in the world.
Yeah, how do you position it when it comes to buying and selling players now? Because some of these big brands in Europe now have the cash. They can come in. They can pick off some top players in the NWSL they have. I see it as being healthy, right?
Yeah, I do. And I think at the end of the day, if you look at your environment, if you create an exceptional environment where players are actually getting better week in and week out, they're treated respectfully, but they're also challenged, a really, really good environment is second to none. And I think that's something players take a lot into account. For sure, there's other things that we can't control. But I think for me, it's like, how do you create an environment where they want to tell all their friends to come to?
Fabrice, I want to thank you for making the effort to come all the way out here tonight. I hope you go get something to eat here. The food's great. Grab a beer if you want. I don't know if you drink. I'm not pushing you. But it is Senate Avenue Brewing, and they do make great beer here. Okay. That's one thing we do know. Thank you so much for coming out. By the way, next game is?
This Friday, 7 o'clock.
Down at Shell Energy.
Yes, sir.
All right.
San Diego Wave.
Let's get down there. San Diego Wave's a good one, too.
All right.
Fabrice Cottrall, give him a round of applause, everybody.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a break here. Coming up, if we do have the Brazilian midfielder following up Fabrice. Hopefully he's here. Artur. Where is Artur? Where is he? You can't hide a good number six anywhere. There he is. All right, Artur is here. We'll take a break. We're back with more.
ESPN 97.5. Soccer Matters
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Senate Avenue Brewing Company in Jersey Village. Here's Glenn Davis.
Pushing the ball down the right side for Jack McGlynn to stride forward. McGlynn calls it in! What a start! What a goal! Jack McGlynn with just 60 seconds gone!
All right, there we go. I was going to say that music was by a group called Mountain, called Tired Angels. We can't hear enough of the Jack McGlynn goal against Turkey. Couple of things here real quick. Nico's Greek and American Cafe. There's three locations in Houston. You got the Woodlands, you got I-10 in the Beltway, and then you got the original in Montrose. Nico's, look, it's an institution. It's been down there forever. Euros, lamb shanks, souvlakis. They got their own bakeries on site. Exceptional place. It's Nico's Greek and American Cafe. And we do have to give a shout-out to our other great partner that is a pub. That is Hugh O'Connor's pub. That's on I-10 and the Marquee Entertainment Center. But we're here at Senate Avenue Brewing. We just had Fabrice Cottrall, the head coach of the Houston Dash. And now we got one of the best holding midfielders in all of Major League Soccer. Let's give a round of applause to the Houston Dynamo's Artur, who makes it out here tonight. So we really appreciate you coming, Artur, and thanks for taking the time.
No, thank you very much. It's my pleasure being here.
All right. We've all watched this guy elegantly run a midfield, so we're gonna dig into two segments. Segment number one, we're going to talk about his upbringing and growing up in the great footballing country of Brazil. By the way, only one nation has won the World Cup 5 times, and there's only one guy in this room who can say he's from there, I think, and that is Artur. Just about the history of your country in football and what it meant to you growing up.
It's huge. I think in Brazil, it's every kid wants to be a soccer player, always dream about it. It's always the first toy you get as a kid. It's a soccer ball, and it's all we all ever talk about. So it's in the veins. It's always something that you're looking forward to watch, to play, to share, and to talk about.
Your father? Did you have brothers? I mean, did your dad influence you?
Yeah. I have my father. He loves soccer. He always played. He never made a professional, but he's. It's a soccer fan, watch and plays, and I have two brothers and a sister. My two oldest brother, they played soccer. One made it to the professional, so we are from a small town in Brazil, and we moved to the capital because they passed in a tryout for one of the professional teams in the Vitória. And then
you see
we moved.
Vitória?
Yeah.
And their youth teams used to come to Texas a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we moved to Salvador. That's the capital of Bahia. And one ended up playing for Vitória for a little bit. And my oldest brother, he played for Bahia.
Wow.
And then we moved, and yeah, I grew up in there.
Houston Dynamo midfielder Artur in the house here today. Okay, so you're with Sao Paulo, and you get discovered by the Columbus Crew. Tell us a story about how they saw you, and then they bring you to Major League Soccer.
Yeah, I was, I think, 19, 20 years old when the Columbus Crew went to do a preseason in Sao Paulo. And they were looking for players and, like, doing the preseason. And I think that was my name popped up to come and to Columbus. And I didn't know much about the team, to be honest.
Did you know much about Major League Soccer? Then tell the truth.
No, I didn't know much about the league. So it was something new. But I was interested to try. I want to play soccer. I wanted to experience something new. And I went to train with the team for a little bit in Sao Paulo for the preseason. And I liked the way the coach back at the time was Greg Berhalter. I liked the way the team played and the teammates and the planes. And then I went to Columbus for 1 year as a loan in 2017. And then by the end of the loan, they bought me to stay permanent.
So was part of the allure the excitement of coming to a new country as well, or did that not matter?
A little bit, because I was interested on the growth as a like a personal growth, experience something new, a new language, a new league, and I thought it would be important for my career.
Dynamo midfielder Artur joining us. Tell us a little bit about your family. You have kids. You have a wife. You're a family man, and you're also a excellent professional football.
Yeah, I have been married now for 5-6 years. She's American. She's from Ohio. I met her when I was playing for the Crew.
See, there you go. America's a great place.
And we have a little daughter now. She's 2.5, Natalina. And it's good. It's different. We're merging two different cultures. And it's a good experience to me. I love being a father. And it's been good.
Okay, you're going to bring her that tonight.
Thank you. She'll love it.
Yeah, a ball goes a long way for, geez, everybody. All right, so Pelé, 5 World Cups. Expectations is always high on a country. Brazil's had its struggles as of late. Do you think part of that might be because of the fact that so many Brazilian players go to Europe now? Like back in the day when Pelé won 3 World Cups, everybody played in Brazil, right? It was probably easier putting a national team together. Do you think the effect of a lot of the players now all overseas in Europe, does that make it more difficult to put a team together for Brazil and be the Samba Brazil?
I don't know. I don't think that much as leaving Brazil. I think it's more giving the importance to the national team, understanding that's more important than the club you're playing for. So I think maybe that got lost a little bit of the dream of playing for the national team and representing it. And I think now the big clubs from Europe are coming, and the players, it's normal, feel more excited about playing for like a Real Madrid or like Premier League or these big clubs. It's a big deal. But I think the like roots, the importance of playing for the national team and giving it the right attention, I think we lost it a little bit. And hopefully we get it back.
You think it's pretty interesting Carlo Ancelotti is going there to be a coach, first foreign coach ever for Brazil. How do you think that works out?
I think it's good. I think it would be good for the national team. Have a guy of that caliber to command. I think he'll have the strength to deal with everybody, not only the players, but the office, right? Everybody that's inside over there that plays a big part as well. So I think he can do a very good job in there.
Neymar, does he play a part in the next World Cup?
I hope so. With all the things that goes on about off-field, I still think he's the best talent we have.
Yeah. Talking to Artur, joining us here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. We're out here at Senate Avenue Brewing, 16,000 Dillard in Jersey Village. Houston Dynamo will be taking on Montreal this weekend. So they'll get back to business. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the next segment, but I want to continue on. Who are your sort of idols, maybe some of the players that, you know, were bigger than life to you when you were a little kid outside of Pelé?
I always liked Kaká when I was young, like the way he played, the speed and everything. I always tried to copy that a little bit. But then also was my brother, because I could see him become a professional soccer player, like, that close. And so for me, it was always an example and someone that I looked up to.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think in America, we have a hard time understanding how the leagues work in Brazil. Is there a simple way of describing how these championships work down there? Because it is kind of confusing, because there's so many, like, regional championship. I mean, I can't wrap my arms around it, and I've been in this business a long time.
It is easy to explain one, but there are so many, like, championships that we play that it becomes a little bit harder. But basically, the Brasileirão, that would be the MLS, it's simple. You play 38 games, and whoever finishes with most points is the champion. But then on the side, you have, like, the regional tournaments that starts at January, the beginning of the year, and then you have the Copa do Brasil, that's like the U.S. Open Cup, that you play different divisions teams, mm-hmm. and Libertadores, and there are a lot of other tournaments that they have to play over there that adds to the amount of games. It's a lot of games, but... For me, it's easy to understand, but it's complicated.
Yeah. But the big teams, the Fluminenses, the Palmeiras, right?
Yeah.
Where Mikael
mm-hmm.
is, right?
Yeah.
I saw him on TV the mm-hmm. other night, by the way. Have you talked to him at all about playing down there and how it's going?
Yeah.
What does he say?
He's very happy. It's different. It's very competitive, every team. And the pressure of playing for Palmeiras as a big team, it's a lot, but he's enjoying it. And I'm surprised. He's been calling me more often than he's talked to me more than he ever talked in here. So it's good. He's happy. I'm happy for him.
Yeah. Speak about that intensity of pressure down there and what it means to the fan, because it's definitely different than in America.
Yeah, it's a lot. I think sometimes they take it over the top a little bit more, they go past the limit, but it's the passion. It's like I said, it's everything you talk about during the day, so you want to brag about it, about, like, with your friends, you want to talk about it, and some people take it outside the stadium, that's not too good, and then it comes to your personal life, right? If you don't play well, and then people come ask questions and on the street, or if the team loses, you can't go out to the mall, you can't do anything, and then it becomes a little bit too much.
Yeah, I think people here don't realize that you lose pretty much in for, you know, until the next game, right? You're not showing your face in public much. Has Mikael talked about the intensity of some of that pressure and the on and off the field stuff, because he's had a big, big club?
Yeah, a little bit, but Mikael is a different guy. He tries not to pay attention to that very much, since he came from Brazil as well, like me. He understands it. The more you try to escape from it and not be looking on internet or trying to go out and these things, it's the best. So I think he's well protected about it, and it doesn't affect him as much.
Talking to Artur, one of the great holding midfielders in all of Major League Soccer, and a big, big part of that great Dynamo run in 2023. You know, he was synonymous with Hector Herrera. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in the next segment. To become a professional soccer player, take us, you know, kind of through the identification process when you were a young player, how that works, how you got aligned to a specific club, and when the invitation came to, you know, to be a part of Sao Paulo.
It was difficult. The competition over there to become a soccer player, it's very big. Everybody is trying, every kid is trying to do it. So
yeah, there's not a male person in that country whose first priority growing up isn't, I want to be a professional footballer, right?
Yeah, right. So everybody wants to do it. You can play, find a game to play anywhere. And for me, I was... I had no other plan on my mind. So playing soccer was everything that I ever wanted. So I would do anything. I would be running on the street like 12 a.m. with the sun like killing me. And to me, it was normal. So I didn't pay attention very much to that. I just wanted to do it. And now that I'm older and I talk to some friends back there, they tell me, I thought you were crazy because you were running and like we were just chilling and everything, and we made fun of you, but it was something that helped you.
You were working so hard, others would kind of make fun of you?
Yeah, and then that was something that helped. And then since my brother played for Bahia, the team already knew my family, my father and everything, and I had the opportunity to do a tryout with Bahia. I did a tryout and I stayed over there, training and playing for 2 years. And then the opportunity came to go to São Paulo for the U20s. And I went to São Paulo and everything after that happened very fast. I played 1 year in the U20s. We won a lot of, like, everything that we played. We won the trophies. It was with André Jardini, that is America head coach.
Oh, yeah.
So he was my coach, and we had a very good year. And then after that, I made my debut for the professional. I played 1 year, and then
what was that like, the debut for Sao Paulo? That must have been a dream come true.
Yeah, it was. It was like a dream. It didn't seem real at the time. My first game was against Flamengo, and it was very difficult. But everything happened well after that. And 1 year later, I had the opportunity to come to the MLS with the Columbus, and I took it.
And we got him. We're going to take a break. Let's give Arturo a round of applause. Got one of the best holding midfielders in all of Major League Soccer. Arturo joining us here. As we go to break, I just want to remind you about the Soccer Matters hats and T-shirts, LamontBrands.com. Also, want to remind you that Cactus Music, all of our music here, if you like vinyl, you like CDs, you're getting into that, you got to go to Cactus Music. It's kind of like a little bit of a museum. Also, I will remind you, tomorrow night, the new show, it'll only be the second episode I'm hosting. It's called Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup. It's right here on ESPN 97.5. Our Terps coach, Ben Olsen, is going to recount the time he played in the 2006 World Cup for the United States. So that's Destination 2026, Houston Countdown to the Cup tomorrow night. Let's take a break. We'll come back with more Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5 from Senate Avenue Brewing.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Soccer Matters
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Senate Avenue Brewing Company in Jersey Village. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Excited that everybody came out here tonight. It's been a really, really good night. We're finishing up with our tour here, the final segment of the night at Senate Avenue Brewing. We aren't going to talk about the scoreline of the U.S. national team game, so we'll stay away from that for now because I think the knives are being sharpened for tomorrow. One quick thing I wanted to mention here. Josh Sargent, who's a striker, Leeds got promoted to the Premier League. I mentioned this earlier in the show, but he's at Norwich City, and apparently Norwich City wants $23 million for him, so I don't know if that'll come off. But that's going on there. Matt Turner may end up at Lyon for $9 million. We'll see. He's a backup at Nottingham Forest. So there we go. We welcome back Arturo as we're going to finish it up here tonight. So let's get into some Dynamo talk. The first thing I want to ask you about is, all right, no more HH. Your position in a lot of ways had to change based on who's around you, right? Can you take us into that a little bit? Because all of a sudden, you might have played the position a little bit differently with Hector there, with the knowledge of his skill set, as opposed to maybe others, with no disrespect to anybody.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. Hector has a lot of qualities, and I think we understood each other very well. So a lot of things happened naturally for us, and of course the quality and everything. And for me, yeah, I need to adapt with whoever is playing by my side and see how I can help them get in a position that they it's the best characteristics for them. It's different. Every player brings something different that we need to adapt around it, and it's not easy to do that in like one game. It's always better whenever you have more repetitions and start to know each other even more.
So you're playing with Hector Herrera one day, and the next, and you're not having to guide Hector, but now you got a Brooklyn Reigns next to you, and you're helping to mentor and guide him, and we see him growing very well next to you. With additional playing time. But you now have to kind of help him, right? And maybe a little bit more of your game is helping him. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. Brooklyn, it's ever since I got here, he was very good. I love the way he works and the way he plays. He has a great potential. And for him now to getting the minutes that will help him a lot. And I've seen him growth as well. It's very good. He has some different characteristics. He's very intense and can keep the ball, can dribble and defend. And the experience trying to help him get and some things that you can only learn on the field and with the repetitions, right? And having to me, I always wanted somebody to help me with that and. I try to help him the most I can.
Being the captain now, do you feel like your energies have to go a little bit more around to like Brooklyn and others maybe?
Yeah, it's different. Yeah,
is before, that an adjustment? Is a big adjustment?
Yeah, it is. To be honest, it is because before I always felt like a leader, like a captain before, but I wasn't the main guy, right? There was a captain that was doing that job, and I was helping with it. And now that I need to do the job and find the people that can help me around it, it's something that it was an adjustment and was something new. It's different. You have to pay attention and make sure that everybody has the right mindset and is feeling well. And you need to take care of the teammates and everybody. But I like it. I feel good about it. I'm learning a lot, and hopefully I'm helping the team as well.
So let's talk a little bit about Jack McGlynn, because you're obviously helping him as well. He's a little bit higher up the field now, but your ability to balance the team out allows him to attack and do a lot of the things that he does well, scored a goal for the U.S., obviously. Some of your impressions about Jack and where he's at now with his game and how he's kind of grown once he got pushed a little higher up the field, I guess.
Yeah, Jack is great. His technique, his passing, everything, it's amazing. His left foot, it's different. When he joined us, we could see that already. He could help us a lot. And I think finding this position up in the field that he can help us even more, it's very good. We can get him closer to the goal. And maybe not have to come down to closer to our goal as much. I think it will help us, and it's helping us. And his mindset, it's great. He always wants to learn. He always wants to do better. And he's not scared of playing. And I think it's a big thing for him.
From the outside, he looks like he's got very professional habits. Like he's got a goal in mind. I mean, obviously, he's stated it publicly. He wants to get to Europe one day. He's on the fringe of the, you know, potentially going to the World Cup. So I would imagine he's a pretty motivated kid.
Yeah, he is. He's always trying to stay up after the field to take free kicks, to take shots and everything. And I think that's he's always listening whenever someone has something to talk. And he will get whatever he needs to learn. And you can see that it's somebody that wants to keep improving.
Houston Dynamo midfielder. He is also the captain of the Houston Dynamo. Played for a legendary Sao Paulo in Brazil. He is Artur. He's joining us live here tonight. Okay, I get the sense now things may be changing with the health of players coming back, with some new signings. You've had the emergence of Andrade, a left back. You got Dwayne Holmes is healthy now. Also Lawrence Anali, who everybody fell in love with the brief time they saw him. So does the dynamic of the team, you think, if we look forward, is it going to change a little bit? Will it be capable of more, maybe in attack, based on these individuals?
I would say so. I think so, because Lawrence brings something different that we had with Nelson before, and then we had with him when he arrived, and that's something that takes the pressure out of the midfield. That it's an area that we always were very good at. We like to play through the middle with the players that we have, and whenever we have something different wide, it makes harder for the teams to defend, because if they try to close the middle too much, then we can hurt them in a different way. And I think that will give us an extra push over there, and having everybody else healthy as well brings the competition to the team that is very needed, because it's part of the nature to get some people get comfortable sometimes, and in this area that we work, it's not good. You need to be sharp and have the competition at your side. And so I think having that as well will just get the team better.
Do you, Artur, have a mechanism where you do a bit of a self-check to make sure you're not getting too comfortable, right? Can you do that on your own, or does that have to come from a coaching staff?
Now that I'm more experienced, I can always keep and check on that a little bit better. Lately I have no problem with that. I always try to watch myself and what I'm doing, making sure that I think I've played every game in the last three seasons here, so I think I was watching that I can play well and I'm healthy to play. But as a young player, as I told you, I always wanted somebody to help me, and I wish I had that more. And I'm sure I could have done some better some other times when I was younger, like getting relaxed and thinking that what I've done was enough, and it's never enough. I think we know that in soccer, things get forgotten very easy. So it's a day-by-day thing. You need to do better tomorrow than we did yesterday.
Do you live by, I'm as good as my last game, my good training session, I'm as good as my last?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've put out a lot of really good things for young players, if young players are listening. I want to make sure I exaggerate what an elite athlete does. Like, I know you're concerned about your diet. I know you're doing different things on your own at home after training. It's not just training for an hour and a half and going home. Can you take us into some of the lifestyle things you do to remain an elite athlete? Because, by the way, you've been an Ironman. I mean, you have not had any injury problems.
Yeah, it's not just a training facility thing. To be an elite athlete, you need to work the whole day like a normal person that gets up in the morning and works until the night. I think for us, it should be the same. So I try to, after I'm done at the training facility, I do Pilates every week. I try to eat well and stretch and watch games so you can study, because it's a mental game as well. And that helps, because the things we do at the training and in the gym in the morning, and whenever we go in, it's good, but you can always do a little bit more. If you want to get to a different point on your career, you need to do a little bit extra, because that's the only way you're going to be different, right? And I think it's not only when you have to work, but also when you go home, you need to do things that will help you to achieve that.
So, and we're going to make this real quick. This is the last one, and you're going to have to answer this quickly. So you're at home watching MLS games, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
You're not just getting what the coaches are giving you, but you're home doing a little bit more.
Yeah.
Artur, you're the best for coming out here tonight. Let's give him a round of applause. Away from his family tonight, comes all the way out here to visit with us. How about that? That's pretty darn good. He is Artur. He is the captain of the Houston Dynamo. We ended in a very big way here tonight with him. Thank you to everybody here at Senate Avenue Brewing, Andrew Mitchum and company, for doing such a wonderful job. Thanks to all of you for coming out here and making it not only special for Artur, but even this this slug of a host here as well. So thank you very much for coming out. And reminder, you can get the podcast of this show at Spotify, Apple, and at ESPN 975. For Brian McDonald, engineer out here, for Sean Makes back in studio, I'm Glenn Davis. Remember, soccer matters.
ESPN 975.